Hi, I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We begin our program with a study from the Veterans Affairs Center of Excellence for Suicide Prevention. What did they find? A study published in PLOS One, the scientific journal, found a lower risk of suicide and self-harm among those who supplemented with vitamin D in comparison with unsupplemented persons. Now, we know that vitamin D does an awful lot of good for the body. It builds up your defense mechanism, your immunity, helps prevent colds and flu, etc. But then this time, they looked at 169,000 veterans who were prescribed vitamin D2 and 490,000 veterans treated with vitamin D3. Members of both groups were matched to an equal number of control subjects who received neither vitamin. So it's a good study. They found 45% lower risk of suicide attempt or self-harm among vitamin D2 and 48% among the vitamin D3. So vitamin D3 is what we advocate on this program. So the higher dose of vitamin D3 was associated with greater benefit than lower dose. So people taking maybe 500 to 800 units a day, not enough. 1,000, not enough. Get up to around 3,000 to 4,000 or 5,000 units, okay? And that will help people who are suicidal. Now, another study, and this is from the Shahid Beheshti University of Medical Sciences, found that compelling research concludes that sesame seed paste, that's tahini, reduced the risk of cardiovascular disease by 39% in only 6 weeks. Well, the number one cause of death in the United States for medical issues is cardiovascular disease. So if we could reduce it by almost 40% just by having some tahini. Now, I use tahini on a regular basis. I have 7 different nuts and seeds that I use. I use walnut 1 day a week and about 2 tablespoons. Then it's almonds, and these are all organic and raw. And the key is all organic and raw. And then tahini. And I use cashew and watermelon seeds, which are great, pumpkin seeds, and sunflower seeds. So, and there are other nut butters you can use as well, pistachio nut butter, pecan nut butter. They're all good, okay? So heart disease might sound like, well, it's inevitable, but it isn't. In fact, 17.3 million people die each year of it. And that's growing tremendously. So this was published in an archive of medicine that found that tahini can actually reduce the cardiovascular risk, and also especially if you have diabetes, high blood sugar. So change your diet, change your health, and change the blood pressure, change the triglycerides, cholesterol, and the what is called the atherogenic index. Not hard to do. By the way, if you've never heard of the atherogenic index, it is an index of heart disease, and it went down a remarkable 39% in people using tahini. Okay? Just something to share. Now, another study from Imperial College London, ultra-processed foods, that's the average American diet, French fries, pizzas, may be linked to an increased risk of cancer. A higher consumption of these processed foods is believed to be a risk factor for dying from cancer. That's what the study shows. This was at the school's public health department. And it was very comprehensive. And it looked at all the different ultra-processed foods and the risk of carcinogens. And the ultra-processed foods are foods which have been heavily processed during their production. The sugary drinks, the mass-produced packaged breads, many ready meals, and most breakfast cereals. And the first U.S. study of its kind used UK Biobank records to collect information on the diets of 200,000 middle-aged adults. And they found over a 10-year period, the more processed foods you have, the more likely you are to develop over 34 different types of cancer. Because all cancers stem from one principal concept, and that is inflammation. So taking a healthy plant-based diet with lots of fresh-made juices especially green juices, turns off inflammation in the body. So does curcumin turn off inflammation in the body? And cat's claw and cayenne, and vitamin C and quercetin. Now, University of Michigan Department of Medicine found that 1 in 8 Americans over 50 show signs of food addiction. So whether you call them comfort foods or highly processed foods or junk foods or empty calorie foods or just some American favorite foods and soft drinks, a sizable percentage of older Americans over the age of 40 have an unhealthy relationship with these foods. In fact, about 13% of people age 50 to 80 showed signs of addiction to certain foods. And this was in this national poll on healthy aging. So the more of these we eat, the worse it's going to be, the more likely you are to suffer diseases and premature death. See, for so long, we were told to eat the food pyramid foods. The food pyramid is a completely fraudulent effort. It's contrived by all the major food processors, from the sugar people to the refined confectionery people, the meat, egg, that they're all in there. But what's not in there? Smart living and good selection. From UCLA Medical Center comes a study that shows that aged garlic extract, that's a liquid garlic, can reduce dangerous plaque buildup in your arteries. Now, you can't feel plaque building up. You won't know it's building up. But if you have the average sedentary lifestyle, if you're not taking proper supplements and exercising and eating right, you will have plaque buildup. So the supplement aged garlic extract, it's just older garlic, they age it, and then they liquefy it, can reverse the buildup of deadly plaque in the arteries and help prevent the progression of heart disease. That's according to a Journal of Nutrition article. Research done at the Los Angeles Biomed Lab found that reduction in the amount of low attenuation plaque, or what's called soft plaque, in the arteries of patients with metabolic syndrome who took aged garlic extract. So make sure you're taking 1 tablespoon once a day of aged garlic extract. It's not a lot. And by the way, what's nice is you can't smell it on your breath. All right? And they compared this to a placebo, so it was placebo-controlled. It's 2,400 milligrams, that's 2.4 grams. That's a small amount. Don't have to take a lot of it to clean up your arteries. And also from University of California, a study examines the association between sleep medication use and the risk of dementia. The new study shows that sleep medicines increase the risk of dementia for people or Caucasian. But the type and quality of the medication may be factors in explaining the high risk. It follows previous work that shows people who are African-American have a higher likelihood than people who are white of developing Alzheimer's disease, the most common type of dementia, and that they have different risk factors and disease manifestations. So we have a lot of people in our society who are in nursing homes or hospice care or at home with dementia and Alzheimer's. And remember, all that could have been ameliorated with a healthy diet and healthy water and juices and proper supplementation. But we're not making those choices at this time, and we should be. That's the latest on health and healing. And by the way, for those of you who are watching this program now, and because I video it each morning, if you go to prn.live, you'll see all the other programs. If you go to GaryNall.live, you'll also see all the things you're not aware of that we are producing for your benefit. But every morning, I film any, by the way, it could go an hour, but it's generally somewhere around 40 minutes, what's called a classroom on the air. Today, I did one on harmonizing your life. And I talk about when you're with the right people and you feel that natural affinity, you're harmonizing your energies. When you're in the right job, your right environment, where you live in the right space, when you have the right ideas, you'll feel it. And it's just knowing how to harmonize in order to keep yourself happy and healthy and vibrant and growing. So, and it's free. And so you can go up and you can go to three sites, Odyssey, Rumble, and you can also go to Gary Nall on YouTube and download these. There's lots of information and inspiration in them. All right? We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. I've been choosing clips to show on this program that shows you how the house of cards of the establishment is collapsing. More and more, we're getting reports frequently through the Freedom of Information Act, but also in lawsuits, where we're finding out that the people have been making decisions of how we should live our life, what we should do and not do, the sovereignty of our body or not, have been completely in disregard for the outcome to we, citizens. I'm going to give you an example of this right now. Tucker Carlson, on some things I agree, some things I'm completely on the opposite side. But we always send him information with the hope that he will find it and use it, because he's got a very large platform. In fact, more liberals and more Democrats watch his program than any program on MSNBC or CNN. These other networks are just jokes. But he's getting the people who would normally be invited on the more liberal programs, but they're on the wrong side of this issue. Now, here's a good example. The doctor you're about to hear and watch, he is an ultra-Orthodox doctor. He is one of the world's most respected cardiologists. He is a person whose family are made up of physicians, including his father. His father died of a heart attack shortly after taking the vaccines. He took the vaccines. He went on television to encourage everyone to take the COVID vaccines. And he thought that that was the right thing to do. He says here, and you hear him say it, that he did not believe any vaccine ever was bad. They were all good. And they were great benefit, including the new COVID vaccines, until he began to get calls from cardiologists in Scotland and Great Britain, including cardiologists, friends of his, who said, there's something wrong here. We're seeing in our practice real spike in myocarditis and strokes and heart attacks that we would never see, and especially in younger people that we would never see. And so as orthodox and closed-minded as he was, and he acknowledges this, he began then, as a scholar, as a professor, he began to look at the actual scientific data. Because that's one of the things he also does, aside from seeing patients. And he worked in a COVID ward. But he also looks at and describes the truth about different scientific studies. And began to see that, my goodness, why didn't we find this? Why didn't we know this? And now he says no one should be getting the vaccines. That's his words. And he also talks about the corruption, the greed within everything involving COVID. So now he is one of hundreds of thousands of scientists and doctors around the world who are questioning everything they were told, and their whole house of cards is collapsing. We're finding all this information out. Whistleblowers coming forward. We have one next week on our program on this very topic. Someone who sat at the table of power, who was there in all the conversations, and knows the truth. So, this is a 55-minute program, and we're going to show you a clip of this. Why? Because a lot of people that I've spoken with still believe everything Anthony Fauci did was right, believe in the vaccines, and are still attacking those who were not vaccinated, even if they had a legitimate medical reason not to be vaccinated. In fact, there's a clip that if we have time for, I'll read you later. It's just from Epoch Times, where there was a secret meeting with all the top people in the Anthony Fauci U.S. Public Health Service world, where they argued about, okay, we've got evidence here about the natural immunity. People were not vaccinated who got COVID, and now they have a really strong immune system. No adverse effects. Shouldn't we allow that to count for two vaccines so they'd only have to get one more, two and a booster? Remember, that was originally what was suggested. And oh, no, they wouldn't go for that. So they knew natural immunity was the best protection. They knew that. And they prevented anyone from sharing that. That's something you didn't know. I'll give you the specifics. I'll tell you the exact people a little later on in the program. And we will be going to your calls. I'd like you to call in at 888-874-4888 and explain to us what you feel now, what you've learned now, compared to the beginning, when most people trusted, understandably so. I'm not attacking anyone who took the vaccine. I would never do that. That's your freedom of choice. In fact, to help people who've taken the vaccine and had adverse effects that were hidden and lied about, I have a new documentary coming out probably in another week to give them protocols from other doctors who've been using these protocols from the very beginning. Just imagine this. We could have saved upwards of 90% of the people who died worldwide if we used these protocols from these respected orthodox pro-vaccine doctors. But we didn't. Everything was shut down and these people were attacked. What does that tell you? And still, they're pounding the drums to get vaccinated as if nothing has been revealed in the last 3 years. Then we give a pause. That shows you how captured those individuals, those institutions, the media are to the special interest groups. Now to this piece on the Tucker Carlson. I want to commend Carlson. Look, I challenge him when he does some really stupid programming, which he does. But look where Naomi Wolf and Glenn Greenwald and Matt Taibbi and Max Blumenthal, look where they go. They go on his program. Why? Because they're not there to support right-wing or conservative values. They're there to use that form to reach a larger audience because all the liberal media have cast these people aside, condemned them. That's unfortunate, but that's the reality we live in. Now to the clip.
Tucker, I couldn't fathom the possibility, although I was a little bit skeptical about the benefit, and we're going to come on to that in a minute, I couldn't fathom the possibility that a vaccine could do any damage whatsoever, any significant damage to the body. Then the situation evolved, and what happened was extraordinary. First and foremost, a friend of mine, I won't name him, very eminent cardiologist in the UK, I met him in April, a few months later, and he said to me, and he's his late 30s, and he said, Asim, I've not had the vaccine. And I said, okay. He said, something troubles me. I said, what is it? He said, I looked at Pfizer's original trial that led to the approval, the randomized control trial that led to the approval of, yes, of the vaccine globally. He said, in the supplementary appendix of that trial, you can see, and I've obviously verified this, there were 4 cardiac arrests in the vaccine group and 1 in the placebo. He said, it could be spurious, it could be just a coincidence, but he said, if the signal is real, we are going to see a real problem going forward in the next couple of years, and I want to wait and see what happens. Then in July 2021, my father, who was a retired general practitioner, honorary vice president of the British Medical Association, he himself also had been quite a strong proponent of the vaccine, you know, the rollout, etc. He suffered an unexplained cardiac arrest. I knew my dad very well. He was super fit. You know, he was a sportsman. He was walking 10,000 steps during lockdown. His diet was good. I knew his cardiac status was fine. And then he suffered a cardiac arrest. And I ordered a post-mortem because it didn't make sense to me. And the
he died from it.
He did. I mean, I was actually on the phone to him when 2 of his neighbors who were doctors came round. He had a cardiac arrest in front of them. And I basically went into kind of cardiology mode because I've published research and looked at out-of-hospital cardiac arrests. And if it's witnessed and you call the ambulance in time, more than 50% of cases a patient will survive. I said, listen, yes, Don't worry, we'll sort him out. And because the NHS was under so much strain, the ambulance took 30 minutes. So I was on FaceTime when they put the...
Oh, come
you know,
on.
So I saw flatline. I just told them to stop because I knew. I mean, this is what I've done throughout my career.
Yes.
So it was obviously very...
How old was your father?
He was 73. And for me personally, Tucker, as well, it was quite devastating because he was the last surviving member of my immediate family. I lost my mum 3 years earlier. I lost my brother when I was young. So it was like, okay, I'm now essentially alone in terms of my immediate family. But I ordered a post-mortem, and the post-mortem findings did not make sense. What they found, Tucker, was 2 of his arteries were critically stenosed. They were severely narrowed. And it didn't make sense because I had heart scans done on him a few years earlier. Routinely, everything was fine. So in my head, I thought, he's had rapid progression of coronary artery disease. I couldn't think of the reason why. I've been involved in research explaining how heart disease develops, how it progresses. And of course, things like poor diet, lack of exercise, and of course, severe psychological stress, and we'll come on to that as well, is a big risk factor. I thought, was he really stressed? Was it because he was bereaved, because he was still struggling with the loss of my mum only a year and a half before? And that was the only explanation I could give, but it didn't sit with me. I didn't quite understand it. And then a few months later, I get contacted by a journalist from the Times newspaper. And she said, listen, Dr. Malhotra, you're a pioneer in this field around heart disease, etc. We're hearing reports in Scotland of unexplained 25% increase in heart attacks, right? And they don't know exactly what's going on. And at that time, Tucker, I hadn't linked the vaccine, but I said, with lockdowns, with everything that happened, and we know people's diets got worse, even though COVID was a disease that exploited people's poor diets and obesity, and the psychological stress, I said, I predicted anyway, even a year before, I said, we're probably going to see a rise in heart attacks, right? Not to this massive degree, but we would probably see it. And I said, it's probably because of those factors. Diets got worse, stress is high. And she said to me, well, we're hearing the reports. What do you think about the vaccine, Dr. Malhotra? And I said, listen, as a good scientist, it would be unscientific of me to completely exclude that possibility, but I said it's unlikely. 2 weeks later, a couple of things happened in succession, right? And this is where the story gets very, very almost melodramatic, if you like. One was a cardiothoracic surgeon called Stephen Gundry in the States published an abstract in the journal Circulation, which is the premier cardiology journal of the world, one of the most premier journals. And he found, monitoring hundreds of his patients, that after two doses of the mRNA vaccine, Pfizer or Moderna, there were increased markers of inflammation linked to coronary artery disease, increasing the risk after just 10 weeks of someone's risk of, say, having a heart attack of 11% in 5 years, right, suddenly jumped to 25% within 2 months. Now, just to put that in perspective, Tucker, if I decided today I was going to smoke 40 cigarettes, I was going to completely stop exercising, and just gorge on junk food, I couldn't increase my risk even close to that in that space of time. Absolutely. Right. So I was like, okay, one bit of data. Okay, is it replicated? Is it coincidence? Whatever. As a scientist, you need to look at other signals. Then I got contacted by a cardiologist in a very prestigious British institution. I won't name the institution to protect him. I know this person very well. He has very high integrity. I've worked with him for many, many years. And he said, Asim, there's something I've got to tell you, and I'm very upset about it. I said, what is it? He says, in this institution, the cardiology research had found by accident, looking at coronary imaging, so imaging of the heart, they found in vaccinated versus unvaccinated huge markers of coronary inflammation, right? A signal from the mRNA vaccines. They then had a meeting and they sat around and they said, listen, the lead researcher said, we're not going to publish these findings because it may affect our funding from the pharmaceutical industry.
Oh, come on.
So this person was very upset. I then now had my dad's situation. I had this heart attack.
Said that out loud?
In the closed meeting, they said it, yeah, in a closed meeting of those researchers.
Did anyone stop and say, I'm sorry, that's immoral?
Well, I think people were quite upset. A lot of them were juniors, right? Junior doctors and junior researchers. And of course, they don't want to call out their boss. You can understand the situation. It's not easy. It's like, of course, they should have done, absolutely. But so then I went on I thought, okay, there's a signal here. I went on GB News. So this was October, November of 2021. And I just said, listen, we've got these signals. We know there's an increase in heart attacks. And there's more than enough evidence to call for an investigation into this. And that's all I said. That interview went viral. In the meantime, behind the scenes, a couple of medical establishment bodies contacted me because of a number of anonymous complaints from doctors that I was bringing the medical profession into disrepute by spreading so-called anti-vax disinformation, despite this evidence being very clear. So I thought, okay.
Despite the fact that you had worked in a COVID vax clinic.
Yeah. No, exactly. It doesn't make sense, right? I mean, right. I'm also Good Morning Britain telling people the vaccine is essentially safe, not to worry about it. So it doesn't make sense. So I thought, okay, I dealt with that 4 weeks, you know, and I wrote a kind of response. I had support from other people and it was fine. They left me alone and left me with a warning, okay? So I then said, okay, what can I do here? This is around the time in the UK, they also announced they were going to bring a mandate for National Health Service staff. And I knew that there was something fishy going on because one, we've got a vaccine that has clearly potential harms of significance. We know that the virus had mutated by then and become milder. And certainly Omicron, I'll come on to that in a minute, is probably no worse than a bad flu or a bad cold, okay? So I thought, what can I do here? Because there's a big problem, and it needs to be, in my view, I thought it needs to be suspended, and we need an inquiry. But it's a very difficult mountain to move. People have been indoctrinated, right? Doctors think this is completely safe and effective. So I decided that I was going to spend several months critically appraising the data and try and publish it in a medical journal. And in that time, Tucker, and what's interesting in my role as an activist is I think there is something very cathartic and powerful about speaking the truth. When I went on GB News,
that's right,
two Pfizer whistleblowers contacted me, right, and told me what was going on. I then spoke to three investigative medical journalists, and I then reached out to very eminent scientists in Oxford, Stanford, and Harvard, who are not, when I say eminent, I mean eminent of integrity, people who are not directly linked to the drug industry, who could give me more of a kind of sanguine look at the data, so I could verify what I was going to publish. I spent several months, went through external peer review, and then it was published a couple of months ago in the journal called Journal of Insulin Resistance. I chose that journal because, one, they don't take money from industry, and we'll come on to that in a minute. We'll come on to that shortly about the problems of too much pharma influence over medical decision making, and because they also allowed me to write 10,000 words. I wanted to walk people through the situation. What does the data on the vaccine tell us in absolute terms? So what's your absolute benefit? What are the harms, right? I'll come on to that. And then how did we get it so wrong? Why did we get it so wrong? And what are the solutions moving forward? So when I then analyzed the information to look at, okay, what is the true benefit of the vaccine, Tucker, right? And in preventing, say, COVID death from real world data in the UK, which you can extrapolate around the world.
Of course.
And what I found was this, during the Delta wave, which was last year, more lethal than what we've got now, and I broke it down by age group, vaccinated versus unvaccinated. You had to vaccinate 230 people over the age of 80 to prevent one COVID death.
Over the
age of 80. So this is the highest risk people. 520 if you're between 70 and 80, and then it becomes into the thousands as you get younger. Now, this is during the Delta wave, which is more lethal. And by the way, Tucker, there is a caveat here. This is likely still best case scenario because if you're comparing, this is real world data, there's something called healthy user bias. Many people who took the vaccine are healthier than people who are vaccine hesitant.
We will play another part of that clip, and we're trying to get that doctor onto our program, and we'll let you know when that's going to happen. We're going to take a brief break and come back. And if you want to call in at 888-874-4888, we'd be happy to hear your points of view on this. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. I'd like to hear what you think. Give us a call. 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. It's always refreshing when we hear someone talking about something that we would like to believe isn't true, but in fact is true. All right, so we're going to go to another clip right now. And this is Neil Oliver. If you don't know Neil Oliver, he's a historian. He's a teacher, professor, but he has that Will Rogers capacity to tell you the truth and make it interesting. So here he's talking about something that we need to talk more about. He says they're trying to alter the fabric of our reality. I believe he is correct. Hello? So let's go to that clip now, all right?
So much change. And it seems to me that the change, rather than stopping, is just getting faster and faster. And the powers that be are undoubtedly out there drafting all kinds of legislation as hard as they can go. They're not just changing the laws, they're not just drafting new legislation, but they're going so far as to actually change our way of life. And it's happening at such a speed, and it's so all-encompassing that it's actually easy to overlook that it's even happening. You know, it's so blatant and in our faces, it's hard to see it. You know, you've only got to look around at changes like, in Scotland, for example, Nicola Sturgeon has battered through her gender recognition bill, you know, which changes the rules that govern how people identify as men or women. And she's pushed it through despite the fact that, well, it depends on what surveys you read, but anything up to 80% of Scots are opposed to it. And yet it has been voted through by the Scottish Parliament. In fact, not just the SNP, but the Greens, Labour, the Lib Dems, even some Tories. The only people who voted against it were most of the Conservative members of the Scottish Parliament. But a large majority voted it through, despite the fact that a large majority of Scottish people don't want it. Because you think, why? Why are they doing that in the face of, against the current, against the tide of the Scottish people? The online safety bill keeps coming at us, which has consequences for freedom of speech, the way in which people are able to function and operate online. There's all manner of change. You know, they're telling us that they're going to ban gas boilers. They're encouraging everyone to get heat pumps, that anyone with just a scratchy knowledge of physics and familiarity with the climate in the Northern Hemisphere, the northern latitudes of the Northern Hemisphere, knows won't work. They want to take away the internal combustion engine and have us all buy electric cars. There's talk of 15-minute cities, you know, which will trap people or encourage people, let's say, to stay in their ghettos and live lives on foot or on their push bikes, but not venturing very far. So we're being nudged towards smaller lives. All of this is happening. They're coming after food. You know, they want us to be on plant-based diets. They're discouraging us peasants, us proles, from eating meat. They don't want us to take flights. They jet about in their private jets, but they don't want us proletariat having a couple of international flights a year to go on holiday. That's in their firing line as well. So our rights, our way of life, our liberties, the whole kit and caboodle, it's all being changed right before our eyes. And I suppose that long preamble, I just ask myself, to what extent do we have a constitution in this country? And to what extent do we live in a democracy? I would say either we live with a constitution, either we live in a democracy, or we don't. And I think we've reached a point where I want that clarified. I want the powers that be to say quite honestly, does the constitution still safeguard what it was put in place to safeguard, or not? And are we still a democracy, which is to say, does ultimate power rest with the people or not? I just want them to tell us. Just tell us. If that situation has changed, let us know. I would like to know. And so I think all the time, just at the moment, two words that are always in my mind at the moment are Magna Carta. I think we've talked about this before. Magna Carta, it just means the Great Charter. Magna is that same bit that you get in Charlemagne, Big Charlie. So it's the Great Charter, the Big Charter. And it really has that name to differentiate it from a slightly smaller charter, which was the Charter of the Forest, which was kind of in production more or less, well, at a similar point in history, that gave the poor people access to the forests in a way that hadn't been possible before. Magna Carta, it was signed on Runnymede Green, which is a meadow by the Thames. It was signed on the 15th of June, 1215. Well, let's correct ourselves here. King John, for it was King John who was the monarch in question, he didn't sign his name because he couldn't. Well, he sealed it. So he used a seal, you know, a seal pressed into wax. So actually, Magna Carta was sealed, not signed, technically. And it was the culmination of a long period of trouble. King John, the one that's the cowardly lion in the Robin Hood cartoon, that guy. When he was king, he lost Normandy and Anjou to the King of France in 1204. Right, clumsy, butterfingers. He lost all of that territory. You know, he had been, the English king had been a king of England and, you know, king of a vast swathe of France at the same time. But he lost Normandy and Anjou to the King of France in 1204. And he spent the next 10 years trying to get it back. And to try and get it back, he needed money. And in the same way that governments today, the only money they have is our money. They call it government money, but it's our money that they take from us and do with what they want. Well, so it was for King John, and he needed cash, so he was taxing people left, right and centre, particularly his barons, particularly the great landowners around him, because he needed it to finance his own D-Day, you know, his own reconquest of that part of the European continent that his ancestors had had before him. And by 1214, it was all over. He spent 10 years at it. He was taking money off people left and right, and embarking on, you know, military endeavours. And by 1214, he had to call it quits, and it had been a total disaster. So he came back to England with his money all gone, and his prestige just, you know, blown in the wind. He'd just been humiliated. And it was in that moment, thoroughly sick to death of him, that the barons, the great landowners, rebelled. And they eventually, long story short, they forced him to put his mark on a great charter. Basically, it forced him to concede that even he, the king, was answerable to the law of the land. And that is Magna Carta. I mean, they were after him for all... I mean, he was a pain in the neck, John. He was cruel, as well as taking everybody's money in the form of taxes. He was cruel. He probably murdered his own nephew, Arthur, who's a landowner in his own right. He also, the most famous woman for historians was Matilda de Bruz, and he imprisoned her and her eldest son in Corfe Castle and starved them to death. A contemporary writer described him as brimful of evil qualities, right? So the barons got him, and they forced him to come to Runnymede and put his seal on a charter saying that he would mend his ways. And it was this, it wrung from him this statement that even the ruler, even the monarch, was subject to the law of the land. And, I mean, people have been going after Magna Carta ever since, you know, trying to dismiss it. One government after another, you know, since 1215, has tried to get away from it because it's a stumbling block. It's like a concrete block chained to their ankle. They can't shake it off. They would prefer it was not there. It's a treaty. That is what Magna Carta is. It's a treaty, and because it was sealed before Parliament existed, no Parliament can touch it. The only entity that can do away with Magna Carta, well, it's us. It's the people. You'd have to ask the people if we wanted to do away with Magna Carta, but no government can do so. And ever since, because it's an irritant for people who want absolute power, there have been attempts to run it down, and it is imperfect. I mean, in the 13th century, you know, the people that it was talking about were not the poor. It was the landowners. The barons were getting things sorted out for themselves. I mean, let's look at some of what's in Magna Carta. Chapters 12 and 14 prevented the king from levying tax without the common consent of the kingdom. Now, that means the consent of the landowners, really. It doesn't mean the likes of you and me. It doesn't mean the poor people. Chapter 39 laid down something very important. No free man is...
The message I take away from what he has to say is that those in power do not feel obligated to be held accountable based upon the fact that they have power. And we have seen no one, not the Clintons, not the Bushes, not the Reagans, no one, not Jimmy Carter, no one's been held accountable, nor their agencies, for all the crimes against humanity they've committed. So you see, this is something that goes back a long time. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. Should people in power, or should celebrities, should Beyonce and Jay-Z, should be held to the same accountable standards as everyone else? I don't believe they are. I'll give you an example. I believe that the only reason that Will Smith got up and went up there and assaulted the committee who was hosting Mr. Rock is because he knew he could get away with it. And indeed he did. He wasn't arrested and charged. What do you think would happen if you and I walked up to Chris Rock on the street and smacked him in the face? We'd be immediately arrested, and the people would condemn it. He had to know that he was in a room of his peers, just like the barons. The barons said to the king, "You are no longer the supreme voice of law, and you therefore cannot just tax us into oblivion." And so there was a separation. But in spite of that, that particular king and other subsequent kings, like King Henry VIII, continued to believe that they were not held accountable. Think of the president of the United States. Think of how one president is dealt with versus another one. They both have stepped over boundaries and brushed up against third rail. One's treated one way based upon the politics and the economic interest. Another is treated differently. What about the media that supports one side of an issue ideologically, having nothing to do with the truth? We let it ride if we're on the same side. This is all wrong. It's completely wrong. So I believe that when a person's around people like themselves, they feel that there's a certain acceptance. I never will forget when I was back in the early 1970s, 1972, I was out in L.A., and I had made a new friend. And he showed up at the television station after Regis Philbin show one Monday morning, and I would do that on a regular basis. And he said he needed some help, a family member needed help, and I said, okay. So I drove over to his house, didn't know him, seemed like a nice guy, and I helped a family member, helped them overcome a condition. And thereafter, he just, you know, Gary, when you're out here, you stay here, you're my friend now. And indeed, we became very close friends. But he would take me to parties at night where you'd see some of those famous people in Hollywood, directors, producers, financiers, actors, actresses, etc. And they would be doing everything in the most decadent way imaginable. It just looked like a Fellini film to me. And I told my friend, none of this looks real. He's always real out here. I said, you never hear about this. I said, no, none of this gets out. None of this gets out because these people have power. And that's why they like to party like this around other people who have power, because they hold each other's secrets. It's the outsider that gets in, the special assistant, the personal aide, the secretary, someone who comes in who's not normally in that circle. They're the ones who leak to the media and other publications like the National Enquirer. He said, but you can do anything you want as long as you're in that circle. It won't be criticized because they all have their own inner demons they're expressing here. I thought, wow, I would never have known that. Now, those same people were with Will Smith because they're just like him. They just don't all act out in the same way. But you're not there when they're yelling and screaming on set. Don Lemon just went ballistic on one of his co-hosts off camera. It chilled out. It just freaked out the whole group. He got a talk down from this Mr. Lick, who's in CNN now, to change it over. Why did he think he'd get away with it? Why, if someone spoke to him that way, he would immediately take action, but expected no action? And true enough, remember this. When Will Smith, just a few minutes later, won the Academy Award for Best Actor, they gave him a standing ovation. They didn't boo him and walk out. They should have. They didn't. Then they tried to understand, what was this about? Well, you know, because in their own way, they would do the same or have done the same, not always in public, almost always in private. You don't know the dark side of famous people. If you did, you might have a different perception of them. Now, let's just see if anyone's called in. I'd like to hear from you and hear your points of view on any of the things we're discussing. 888-874-4888. Here's something interesting. This is from Josiah Thayer from antiwar.com. The U.S. is making billions being warlords in Yemen. Quote, one of Biden's promises during his presidential campaign was to immediately move to end all support for the Saudi-led coalition of war in Yemen. In February 2021, Biden stood at a podium at the State Department and proclaimed that the war in Yemen must end. Biden underlined the humanitarian crisis as the key reasons the United States withdrew support. An investigation by the Government Accountability Office found that the United States is training Saudi-led coalition and the U.S. has troops on the ground in Yemen. Biden confirmed that the United States has troops in Yemen in a letter to Congress in June last year. Biden lied to the American people when he claimed that the United States was withdrawing U.S. support from the war in Yemen in 2021. And sure enough, the financial value of defense articles and defense services sold by the United States, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates through the foreign military sales agreements signed in fiscal year 2015 to 2021. And look at it, wow, $54.2 billion. So to the people of Yemen, the people who are poor, the people who are hungry, the children who are starving, the hundreds of thousands of children have been adversely affected and died. We can say we're for children, the liberal community in particular, and say we're for children, we're for women. What about the millions of children and women in Yemen? They're dying, they're being killed. The United States is behind it with Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. Are you for them? Well, not so much. I see. The hypocrisy is palpable. Just want to share that with you. Now, we're going to play a short clip here. And this clip will reinforce the idea that what you've been told about deaths is not honest. This is the European excess deaths, the official data. It's only 5 minutes long. But here's how many people have died in excess of what is normal or even for COVID. And why isn't none of this discussed in the American media or in Congress? Because it would show us that we've been lied to and the vaccines are far deadlier than what you might imagine. Let's go to the clip.
Welcome to today's talk, Monday, the 23rd of January. Now, I'm kind of curious, really, just how long can the UK government and other governments and mainstream media keep on ignoring the huge amount of excess deaths that is around? It's just quite incredible. To say an elephant is in the room, it would represent significant understatement. And this is all around the world, or at least all around the sophisticated Western countries. This is happening everywhere. And I'm going to be looking at data today from Europe. This is from Euromono Bulletin. And as we'll see, this is official European data. I'm going to show you this site in a minute. This week, pooled Euromono all-cause mortality. Elevated levels of excess mortality. Overall, all around the place geographically and in all age groups. And we'll be looking at age groups such as 0 to 14. Now, the chief medical officer in the UK has said that the excess deaths are caused by people not being able to get their statins during the pandemic. Well, most 14-year-olds don't take statins, so I think we need to do a bit better than that, to be quite honest. And why mainstream media is not absolutely doing a, in the UK would say, doing a Jeremy Paxman on him. Why aren't the media getting at him and asking him these questions? Where is the investigative journalism here? You know, is it just left to a few eccentrics on YouTube? It's really quite bemusing. Anyway, data from 25 European countries, substantial regions. Average levels from pre-2020. Now, the thing about the data I'm about to show you is they take their averages from pre-2020, so we're not dealing with the increased levels in the pandemic. And here's the first graphic. This is in all ages. Now, these peaks in death here, of course, we expect this because these were during the pandemic months. But then we see that there's another one here and another one very high at the moment. This we wouldn't expect. So here's a bit of a blow up of that. So this is week, this is the middle of 2022, week 26. What we've got here is this is what we would expect, the line here. This is the range we would expect. The red line indicates a significant, statistically significant increase, and anything blue is above that. So we can see that the excess deaths have been consistently high throughout 2022. And yet we don't have an official explanation for this, other than people not being able to get their statins from the chief medical officer. I really think maybe it's time for Chris Whitty to think about going back to some other sort of employment, because I don't see that the job is being done at the moment, to be quite honest. So let's look at another age group here, 0 to 14-year-olds. Now, I'll show you this on the cumulative data here, but it is increased for 0 to 14-year-olds as well. And again, if we see the baseline there, it actually is above. This will be clear when I show you a cumulative graph. But if we look now, we see a significant increase in this age group. These are young people who it's not lack of treating ongoing diseases which is causing this. It's I'm not saying that's not part of it in other age groups, but in this age group, I don't think it is. 15 to 44-year-old age group, again, seeing the baseline here and consistently above the baseline, and sometimes above the significant level as well. 45 to 64-year-olds, again, the high levels in the pandemic waves, you would expect 2020, 2021. This was the alpha wave, for example. Remember it well. This would be the delta wave here. But now it's still above what we would expect, and substantially so. 10,404 in this age group, excess deaths. Dotted line there. So we see that all of 2022 have been, well, we've only dipped below what we would expect there on very rare occasions. This is a significant issue. 65 to 74s, again, fairly similar pattern. And again, we see all of 2022, or at least all the second half of 2022, this really quite a substantial increase. 75 to 84-year-olds, it's kind of everywhere. And again, this is the older age group there, before we go back to the all-age ones that we started with. Now, I'm going to show you some more data from...
He has 20 minutes of showing excess deaths. Now, let's just assume in the United States in a given year, for total deaths, for every disease, every accident, everything, 1.8 million deaths. But now we're seeing something between 200,000 and 300,000 deaths above that every year. Now, this gentleman is one of the most respected people on the internet because he's meticulous in showing the details of the studies. He's not giving his opinion. It's rather dry, but it's accurate. So then in comes Edward Dowd, who had no background in public health. He was a director of one of BlackRock's financial divisions and was very successful. But then once he started to see something was wrong, he brought in two PhDs, hired them, and all they've done for the last year is examine insurance actuary statistics and are finding up to 40% above all the other deaths. And the only thing that can explain it are the vaccines, because it didn't happen clear back to 2015, and it's the vaccines. And yet the media won't touch this, and the administration won't acknowledge it. Just want to let you know. I want to say goodbye to WBAI. You're going to your news, and we're continuing on to the top of the hour. If someone would like to call in, I'd be happy to hear what you have to say. Now, I have a special for you today. I mean, a really terrific special. And here's what it is. You're going to get something that I believe right now we can all use, immune stuff. And you're going to get what I consider the most powerful vitamin C, the Suprema C Extra, 240 capsules. Plus, you're going to get the award-winning documentary, Building Your Immune System Naturally, and Supercharge Your Immune System DVD. Two DVDs on building your immune system. Who doesn't benefit from that? Everyone does. Now, the normal price is $245. You're only paying $99. You heard me right. Today, that's what I'm saying. You're saving $146. I'm not even doing the math on that. Somewhere between 60 and 70% discount. So why would you want the immune stuff? Okay. Well, how about because of all the ingredients it has, and you can Google any one of these ingredients and look for on the National Library of Medicine, look for scientific studies, peer-reviewed studies supporting astragalus, vitamin C, orange juice, L-lysine, acerola, amla, citrus bioflavonoids, turmeric, green tea, olive leaf extract, echinacea, purpurea extract, mushroom blend. We're talking about maitake and organic reishi and organic hymenomastu, organic cordyceps, The Cinesinus, turkey tail, shiitake, lion's mane, zuling, organic chaga, and more. Plus quercetin dehydrate, reduced quercetin, so it's got maximum utilization. Grapeseed extract, rutin, Bacillus subtilis for the probiotics, zinc, piperine, and selenium. Wow. I cannot find another formula in the world that can even come close to this. But there it is, immune stuff. If you care about your immune system, this is just one complementary way of helping it. But then we've got the vitamin C. In one serving, you get 2,241 milligrams, three capsules. But if you don't want that much, you can take two capsules or one capsule, about a little over 700 milligrams per capsule. But my vitamin C is not just straight ascorbic acid. There's also ascorbyl palmitate, calcium ascorbate, potassium ascorbate, magnesium ascorbate, selenium, and cranberries, bilberries, bioflavonoid, acerola extract, beetroot extract, amla extract, and stevia. Well, all that are in there. Hesperidin, acerola. It's in there. There's nothing like it anywhere when it comes to vitamin C. And at this time of year, you want to take vitamin C and immune stuff together in a smoothie. All right? And if you want to really get educated on what you can do to have a stronger immune system, then you'll listen to Dr. Joan Priestley, Dr. Marjorie Siebert, Dr. Sheila George, Dr. Zhang, Dr. Alan Sachs, Dr. Brown, Dr. Chirwala, Dr. Robert Cathcart, Dr. Chris Calopy, Dr. Phil Hodes, and more. The best experts I could find on the immune system in the United States. I filmed them 2 hours long. But not to be outdone, I have Supercharge Your Immune System, where I interviewed a whole different group of individuals and went into great depth about the immune system. So, two great documentaries and two products, all for $99, a huge savings. You're saving, again, just so you're clear on this, you're saving $136. How do you get it? Three ways. One, you can just go online and get it for yourself. Two, you can call Neil in the Vitamin Closet, Monday to Saturday, noon to 8 at 646-926-5430. 646-926-5430. Or you can call ourselves, Sandy and Diane, at 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. At this time of year, you need it, right? We have a huge ice and cold storm coming into the Northeast, and it's going to hit that whole area. You want to have a strong immune system. On a separate note, very quickly, this is the final month that Luann down at the villa is interviewing people who would like to be somewhere on a spectrum to spend quality time, no work, just enjoy yourself, enjoy the environment, wonderful vegan meals and juices throughout the day that's provided. That's called quality of life stay, okay, from a month or more. Just people who've just had it where they're at, they're maybe too stressed, maybe it's not the same great place now that it was where you were living, and you just want to respite, you want to get out, you can do that. By the way, people even in RVs can go down there too. We have places for two RVs, hook up right on the property. But then there are people who are not financially capable of taking time off, maybe are financially stressed, or looking a way of changing their income, changing their life. So we have homesteading projects there. This is a different part of the spectrum. And there they're going to work. But they're going to work at something they'll earn a living at, any of the many different homesteading projects. You have to be healthy. You have to be fit. This is real physical labor. But everybody, no matter what they're coming for, has to come with a positive disposition. Unfortunately, Luann has interviewed a lot of people, and she said something's wrong here. I've gotten one good call from one person that's happy and healthy and wants to come and just chill out for about 3 months. Get their life back in order. And fine, they can do that. But most people calling well, I'm going to send down my son. He's got this, and my daughter's got that, and I've got this and that. Everyone's sick and wanting to come as if this is a clinic. It's not. This is not a place to come to overcome your psychological, behavioral, or physical problems. This is a place to come if you don't have psychological, physical, and behavioral problems, and have a good attitude, positive attitude, and therefore have opportunities you wouldn't find elsewhere in one of the most beautiful, pristine, safe, clean, and sustainable environments in America. You can give Lou Anne a call. It finishes this month because it starts in March. Call Lou Anne at 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. Again, if you just want to come and do nothing except have quality of life, be in a beautiful environment with nature and a nice group of wonderful people, and I'm keeping it small. Or if you have different needs, you're willing to work. Well, there's work there to do, and you don't have to invest in any of that. I've already invested in all this, so now you can start where you couldn't start otherwise. All right? Nice to have you all with us today. And by the way, if you want to watch today's classroom on the air about harmonizing your energy with positive energy instead of negative energy, then you can go up on Gary Noll YouTube or on Odyssey or on Rumble and watch it. Have a nice day, everyone.